Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight episode. We have come to the end of the miniseries. It's issue 4 of Mystery and Madripoor, the fourth and final series. I can't believe it's we're done. I remember when, sigh of relief. I remember when we first started out, we're like, we're thinking maybe these were weekly, you know, and they would come pretty fast. And we realized, no, it's like one a week for 16 weeks and we wouldn't be done till the end of August. That at the time seemed so far away, and we just wanted Wolverine back. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. And now after having read these four series, I still feel that way. And I think a lot of people feel that way. It's like, leave it to Marvel to, you know, beat that dead horse. Because it became pretty clear once Return of Wolverine was announced with Charles Soule and Steve McNiven, which I thought was cool because it's the same team, creative team that gave us Death of Wolverine. And I, as much as I love Declan Shelby's art, he's been announced as the artist, I think, on 2, 3, and 4 of that series. So McNiven's only doing 1 and 5. It just bugs me. I was like, I wanted them to do the whole thing, just like they did the whole thing as far as Death of Wolverine goes. But yeah, once it got announced, Return of Wolverine, like, okay, well, that's the series that we want to read. And I think it showed in the sales. I don't think any of these series did particularly well. I don't think any of them were like a groundbreaking in their stories. They all added a little to the mythos of the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe in a way, or maybe subtracted, returned things to status quo. They all changed something as far as the X universe goes, and we can talk about that a little bit more. But I don't know. We'll rank them at the end here. But overall, this issue I thought was maybe the weakest of the four issues of this series. Especially art-wise. I felt the art really took a step down in quality in this issue. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on in this issue. So
it hasn't been that long since we read the last
one. I don't know who this character is. She wasn't in it before, right?
Who? Psylocke?
No, not Psylocke. The new person. Or is that Psylocke?
That is Psylocke.
That confused the hell out of me.
Because she's not Asian anymore?
Let's not make it about race, but maybe. I can't tell.
Yeah, she's not.
We'll go through it, and it'll make more sense to me.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's give the creative team first. It's written by Jim Zub. We've got art by Tony Silas with Leonard Kirk, and that's probably why I felt the art took a step down. It wasn't just Tony Silas by himself. And then we had a color artist of Felipe Sobrero with Andrew Crosley. So, again, you know, you're throwing another person in the mix there, and that's gonna change the feel of the art. And
I like the colors, though. I mean, I thought this one was brighter than they've been recently. That's one of the only things I noticed about the art was how bright it was, and I liked it.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It does tend to be brighter. And the letters are by Joe Sabino. So it starts off with Betsy Braddock, Psylocke, and
she. Oh, okay. I didn't know her real name. That's why I was confused. I'm like, who's Betsy Braddock? Is she like a new X-Men who's been locked inside a body for like 20 years or something?
So she has been, we saw early on her whole.
She was in the beginning of the issue. I mean, the series. I just didn't realize Betsy Braddock was Psylocke.
Yes. Betsy Braddock, Psylocke, one and the same. So we saw her killed before by Sapphire Styx, her soul being absorbed, and now she's in this limbo place, right, where all the souls that Sapphire Styx has absorbed over the years are kind of trapped. And I guess depending on how much she drains them, you know, she kind of absorbs their soul, their life essence, and then they go to this place, and then there, as the soul is there, Sapphire Styx is kind of living off of it for a while as the soul in this limbo eventually turns into like a shambling zombie-like creature that we see. We see a lot of those other kind of disembodied and nameless, faceless creatures of previous souls that she's absorbed over the years. So
Hunt for Wolverine hashtag, ugh, more zombies.
Right. So we see Betsy there, and she's looking at a reflection of herself, and it actually looks like her. And by that, I mean, and we're talking 30 years ago or so, maybe not.
Which is why I wouldn't know it.
30 years ago, Betsy stepped through the, why can't I remember what it's called? The Siege Perilous, and went in as a Caucasian character and came out the other side as this Asian character, psychic ninja, right? That's how most people look at Psylocke. But before that, she had been this Caucasian woman of like British descent. And then over the years, the stories have come out. Like, so somehow her soul got merged with this other character, Quanen, I think that's how you say it, who used to be an evil assassin and blah, blah. I guess they're just trying to make her a more interesting character, a more physical character. But here she sees herself as she was way back when, right? As the original Betsy Braddock. And then as she touches the reflections, they change before her eyes. She talks about having merged with Quanen, and we even see like kind of different versions, different costumes that Psylocke has had over the years. And she starts thinking to herself about the place and how she got there, being pulled in by that horrific woman, Sapphire Styx. And because she's basically inside Sapphire Styx in a way, she's able to see the history of what Sapphire's done. It's like, my God, this creature feeding, killing, preying on souls for centuries, extending her own life and vitality by destroying others. And then she sees those psychic shells that I was talking about that have been left behind. And they seem to be attracted to her, probably to her vitality. She kind of fights them off, saying that she may no longer inhabit the body of a Japanese warrior woman. You know, now that she is her soul is no longer tied to that particular form. She's like, but that doesn't mean I'm helpless. She has to find a way out of here. And as she's running around, she finds Logan, right? And apparently at some point in the past.
Search over.
It's a, right? It's a
we long, found Wolverine.
It's a long story, he says. Wolverine tells her it's a long story how he ended up there. But clearly, at some point in the past, he encountered Sapphire Styx, and she absorbed a part of his soul anyway. And we get a real quick glimpse there of Sapphire Styx kissing Wolverine. So I imagine that's how that happened. So Betsy talks about how the others that were there, the other psychic shells, were people that had been drained completely, but she couldn't purge the shard she took from Wolverine completely. Maybe the Wolverine's healing factor extends even to his soul. And so Betsy tells him that they need to fight back together and find a way to escape through the maze of Sapphire Styx's mind. And meanwhile, we get a flashback to when, and I imagine this was the point where Sapphire Styx saw the patch persona manifest, right? It's like,
absolutely.
Betsy has awakened this part of Wolverine's psyche that is still trapped within Sapphire Styx. And at this point, he's basically haunting her. So with the power of the two working together, Betsy is able to basically break Sapphire Styx, saying no more souls, a la Scarlet Witch in the House of M storyline, no more mutants. Instead, it's no more souls. It ends here, Sapphire, no more. And Betsy's back. And not only is she back, she talks about like waking from a dream, I'm back where I belong. She's back as a Caucasian woman. She no longer looks like she looked, you know, when she was inhabiting the body of that Asian person. But what I find interesting, though, is she, like, other than the hair and the eyes being a little less narrow, she does look very similar. I don't know if I would necessarily pick this out and say, yeah, that's Psylocke. But, I mean, the hair is purple, so that's kind of a giveaway. But what I'm getting at is Betsy didn't make herself look, at least to me anyway, And maybe it's just the artist's interpretation here. Maybe as we see her going forward as a Caucasian woman again, we'll see her look more like she looked originally. Because here she doesn't. She almost looks like a cross between what she looked like as the Asian psychic ninja and what she looked like originally when she was introduced in comics. So maybe, you know, we find out later on this issue that Betsy, through her power, you know, her soul got removed from that Asian body that she had been in, right? Her soul had been removed. Sapphire Styx drained it dry, like completely separated it. And when Betsy escapes from that limbo place inside Sapphire Styx, we find out later in the issue that she basically recreated her own body using her powers molecule by molecule, basically, right? So what I'm wondering is if this is her new look, kind of a cross between how she looked originally and the Asian form that she had, because in her mind's eye, this is, you know, she's been kind of, I don't want to say tainted, but she's been influenced. Let's say she's been influenced by the form and the figure she's seen looking back at herself in the mirror for the last however many years it is in comic time, right? I mean, that would make sense. So rather than recreate a body that looked exactly like she looked, she's more of a cross between the two. But when she does come back, she's on the platform where the rocket just launched. We see Jubilee's there, Domino's there, Kitty Pryde is there. The rocket is carrying Rogue and Storm into orbit. They're talking about the fact that they need to stop it. Kitty Pryde is yelling at Eric Magneto to try and stop it. But he's weakened from his ordeal, from what Sapphire Styx and was it Brain Mind Blast or whatever her name was, did to him. And he says, I'm still weak. I can't hold it. So we see Kitty launch herself into action. And she basically runs inside the rocket and phases Rogue and Storm out and rescues them. Meanwhile, with Betsy's help, the other X-Men, Jubilee, and eventually the freed Rogue and Storm, they're all able to defeat Viper and Snake Whip. And Viper ends up escaping, but the rest are soundly defeated to the point where Magneto at one point even threatens to kill one of the members, the Mind Blast, you know, for your deeds, you left me weaker than I expected, but I still have enough strength to kill you. And Domino pulls her gun saying, yeah, you're not going to do that. It's one thing to kill in battle, but we're not letting you get away with cold-blooded murder. And Magneto's response, really? You're going to pull a gun on me? Like, yeah, that's not really going to work out too well. But he does relent in the end and say...
Domino's lucky. You don't know. Maybe somehow it works out for her and only her.
That's true. But Magneto says, you know, it's I'm doing this as a favor because you rescued me. I'm going to give in. So what's interesting is as Magneto's threatening to kill her, Betsy's there thinking, I could with a moment's concentration stop Magneto cold, but I need to see if he's returned to the darkest parts of himself. If I need to kill him again to save us all. So it's interesting, kill him again, right? He's, you could really use that line about any of the X-Men. And there's even a line in here about when they're talking about Logan being dead, about how for an X-Men, being dead is more of an intermission rather than a conclusion. That's all too true, especially as I just finished reading the Phoenix Resurrection miniseries. Death has really lost all meaning for the X-Men at this point. I really wish they just stopped killing them because we all know it doesn't have any impact anymore because it's not going to stick.
Well, that goes for like any popular comics character. True. In the end, doesn't it?
I agree. And I think that they need just to stop killing them all.
Stop. No, I agree with you.
Because it doesn't have any weight anymore.
You can pass the torch once in a while, but don't pretend you're going to kill Tony Stark or something because you're not.
Exactly. So Magneto basically dismantles the launch site and he vows to track down Viper and purge every vestige of her criminal empire from Madripoor. And Betsy, who basically narrates this whole issue, Psylocke, says, "I hope so. I hope that keeps him busy. The Master of Magnetism needs a focal point for his attention, lest he fall back into bad habits and try to reclaim the past." So we see the rest of the ex-ladies gathering, thanking Mr. Halliday, who basically ran the bar where Patch Wolverine had a little room in the back with some belongings. And Mr. Halliday says, "You know, I hope that you found what you're looking for." I'm like, "Well, we didn't, but we're not giving up hope yet." And that's when Storm makes the comment about tells Domino, "You've been with the X-Men long enough to know death is more of an intermission than a conclusion." So they did get some information from Snake Whip, of all people. So they do have a lead. In return for a lighter sentence, she copped up the organization's name of the people that hired Viper and her team. And it's Sotiera. So not a big
gasp.
Yeah, not a big surprise there. They'll continue looking for clues to Wolverine's whereabouts. And in fact, Kitty says that she's already reached out to Carol Danvers to see if Danvers and the team at Alpha Flight Station can track where the rocket was heading. And Rogue speaks about how Betsy's been quiet since they left the fortress. And Kitty says, "Well, she's been through a lot. Jubilee's gone to make sure she's okay." So Jubilee, who never had seen Betsy in her original form, says, "So this is you, right? The original, right?" And Betsy says, "Yes." And Jubilee wants to know if she remembers all the dumb stuff they've been through. She says, "Absolutely." Jubilee says, "Okay, so how do you feel?" Well, when Sapphire 6 exploded, my psychic form began to slip away. Instinctively, I used the soul power she left behind to create a new body, molecule by molecule. As you might imagine, it feels a bit strange, but also oddly covering. For so many years, my mind and body have been manipulated by the machinations of others, Dr. Sign, the Strike Division, Mojo, the Hand, all of them using my soul to further their ends. No more. At last, I am myself. No longer tied to someone else's destiny." And then as we see some workmen trying to repair the nightclub where a lot of this all went down, we see one of them grabbed from behind by Psylocke, the Asian Psylocke, saying, "Stay silent, stay calm. I just have a few questions," and we get to be continued. So it appears that Quanon survived as well. So apparently there's two Psylocke running around, two different versions now. And I'm sure there'll be more to come with that, probably in Wolverine Dead End. So
how thick is that issue? How much is that book going to cost?
Yeah, right. And I did see some people complaining online about the fact that the trade of Hunt for Wolverine has the one shot, Hunt for Wolverine one shot, and then it has all four of these miniseries, but it doesn't have Wolverine Dead Ends in it. So it's got
seven. That seems weird.
It's got 17 issues, which I guess technically, I mean, is it called? It's coming out this week. Let me look real quick.
Is it called Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends? If not, it could just be like, yeah, this is the beginning of Return of Wolverine. Right, and maybe, I could buy that.
Yeah, maybe it'll be in.
Because a lot of trade paperbacks ends as a cliffhanger because it's not a complete arc or it's part of a event or something.
17 issues is a pretty big.
That's a fat book.
Yeah, trade already. No, it's called Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends number one.
It should be in the book if it's part of the hunt. It's like not including like Venom Inc. Omega or whatever, yeah. But including Alpha. It's like what?
Yeah, it's pretty strange that they wouldn't include it. So
if that's a $10 book by itself, they'll just release it as its own trade paperback.
I don't think it's that. I wouldn't think it's that much. I don't know. But as far as this issue goes, I mean, it was okay. I feel like at times the Mystery in Madripoor, like issue one, was like really good. It was better than I had anticipated, and I was thinking, wow, this is gonna be really good. It's $4.99, by the way, so it's not
okay. So it's just slightly bigger.
Yeah. Well,
it can't answer. It's not gonna be a satisfying book if it's not like a $10 book. Because Marvel does $10 books once in a while, and they're much bigger.
Yeah.
Like Deadpool does it all the time for some reason.
Because they want your money.
And you get like 100 pages or something, but usually like with Deadpool, usually you're getting like a Shakespeare story or something with your regular story. And you're only getting like 30 pages of your regular story.
Let me see if it says how much. No, it's only 29 pages. So it's a little bit bigger than a regular book, but not huge. You know, regular books usually 20 or 22. So you're getting a little bit more, but not much.
So it's basically Return of Wolverine issue 0. Not even like...
Yeah, it says the hunt is over. The hunt for Wolverine is over. Now the time has come to put the pieces together and see what was learned. Kitty Pryde, Daredevil, Tony Stark, and Sabretooth may have found what they're looking for, but it wasn't what they expected. Where has Wolverine been? What has he been doing? So yeah, I think that this ended up being a pretty good series. Definitely not the worst of the four.
No, it's not.
it went a little up and down. And again, I think that the worst part about this particular issue was that, like I said, the art was just a little bit inconsistent for my taste. Although Nick's right, the colors are a lot brighter. And as far as impact, this may end up being a pretty important issue when all is said and done. Now that we have Betsy Braddock, you know, returning in her original body, and we have a new Psylocke? Is it Quanon? Like, who exactly is it? And time may tell. And you know what would be crazy is if, based on what we have seen happen in these issues, and really this applies to the Adamantium Agenda and number 4 and Mystery Madripoor number 4, not so much the Weapon Lost or Claws of the Killer number 4, but in Adamantium Agenda number 4, we find out that X-23 perhaps is not a clone, at least not the way that she thought she was. And in this one, Betsy Braddock returns. These could be issues that people eventually seek out, and based on the poor sales, they may end up being like actually worth money, which would be kind of ironic. They might actually have some value if people are like, well, when did Betsy Braddock return? If this Psylocke, if this version of Psylocke is like a new version, and this technically would be her first appearance, you could see it being, you know, a sought after book for that reason as well. So that would just be funny and ironic that people didn't want to buy these books. And then,
well, that's how I'm making my future living, because I was getting Batman Incorporated when they suddenly killed off and they brought him back already, but they suddenly killed off Robin, like without warning, like an issue. And you're like, oh, this book's worth something now because no one read this garbage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So again, this series ended up being okay. Kind of like the other ones, it ended somewhat anticlimactically. You know, we didn't see Logan at all. We saw a psychic version of him instead. So anything else you want to say about this series before we rank all four?
No. I'm disappointed in the entire experience so far has been disappointing.
Yeah. So clearly this one, I think for me, might be the most important, have the most important little piece going forward with the return of Betsy Braddock to her kind of her original form. And then that would be followed in importance by X-23, the revelation Stark makes to her in Adamantium Agenda. I don't think that the Claws of the Killer number 4 with the return of Graydon Creed or Lady Deathstrike's father, I don't really think those – I don't know how much that impact or importance that would have. And as far as the –
kind of Adamantium Agenda.
The Weapon Lost, yeah, that the
oh, yeah.
Kind of the new status quo for Cypher or the death of the Albert Reaver Wolverine. Again, I just don't know what kind of impact those are going to have long term, if any. So as far as ranking the four different series, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think the best one was in your mind?
I really like Adamantium Agenda.
So that's number one for you.
And I knew that from the beginning that I probably would, because as it was described, it's described as like the Avengers blockbuster film, and that was the best we've seen Wolverine is through flashbacks, I feel, in the Hunt for Wolverine series.
And it had the characters that you enjoy the most.
Exactly. It had my boys. Well, I mean, and girl, I love Jessica Jones, but yeah.
And then for the
and they all got Iron Man costumes.
That's true. That might put it over the edge for me too, as my favorite. So what do you have ranked second?
Weapon Lost. Frank McGee deserves his own series. That could be the best thing that could come of this miniseries, is Frank McGee getting his own series.
And then, so I guess third, you must have Mystery and Madripoor.
Absolutely.
And then coming in last, Claws of the Killer, obviously.
Yep.
Okay. Wow, this is really tough for me, actually.
I figured you'd pick Weapon Lost first, but then it really didn't go anywhere in the fourth book.
Yeah, and that's kind of the reason. Like, early on, three issues through all three of the series, I definitely was leaning toward Weapon Lost. But it maybe had the least lasting impact of any of the series. And so for that reason, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Although it does have Frank McGee, like you said, so that does raise it up
in bonus points,
right? But a lot of bonus points, as you said, for Adamantium Agenda because of those Iron Man outfits. They all,
yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
No, even better than that, though. I love the Wolverine flashbacks to like Civil War era. It just,
yeah.
I don't know. It meant more to me than any other Wolverine based storyline in the other books, because it was kind of a point of reflection for Tony, even.
I guess I'm right there with you in agreement then. Because the other thing I'm thinking about is as much as I love Charles Soule, I think he's an incredible writer, and Frank McGee was amazing, Frank McGee especially did have some pretty good lines in that Weapon Lost series. I think that having that flashback and Tom Taylor's dialogue, there was some really funny lines, especially with Spider-Man. In Adamantium Agenda. So, you know, seeing the flashback to the bomb and people calling Tony out and just the funny lines. Are you calling me? Like, what is it that X-23 says? When Tony's like, yeah, they could use this, all this DNA to create like disasters or catastrophes or whatever. She's like, are you calling me a catastrophe? And he does. Yeah. So I think for that reason, for being able to see that cool flashback that tied back into when this was the Avengers team, you know, Wolverine, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Spider-Man. Yeah, I think the flashbacks were amazing. The dialogue was great. Seeing him in the armor was cool. And watching X-23 cut both Mr. Sinister's hands off. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Adamantium Agenda. Just barely edging out Weapon Lost. Weapon Lost was right up there for me as well. Cause again, Frank McGee had some good lines and he was just cool. Like, the guy rides a flying motorcycle. It's just
awesome. He's the standout MVP of the entire miniseries. All of them, four of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would give those two series a solid B. Maybe even a B plus for Adamantium Agenda. I'm going to give Mystery and Madripoor a C. It's average, you know, it's
agreed.
You know, you read it once and you'll remember that Betsy Braddock got her original body back. Psylocke got her original body back. And that's pretty much what you'll remember. And I'm going to have to bring up the rear with a D, maybe a D minus for Claws of the Killer.
But not an F,
but with the caveat that I don't care about any of those characters. It was so hard for me to care because I don't care what happens to any of those characters. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not a big fan of zombies. So that book was like really stacked against, you know, the odds were stacked against it for my taste from the start.
For me, like, the only characters I knew were the Avengers characters. Like, even Daredevil, I'm more familiar with his... I don't get any of the Daredevil books. He shows up in Avengers once in a while or an event once in a while. But otherwise, I know him more from the TV show than the comics. So, like, for me, the main characters I knew were, like, even, like, because I read Spider-Man, I've read Jessica Jones, I've read some Luke Cage. So that was the team I knew. So the other ones kind of all had to prove themselves to me. I'm not a big X-Men reader. I only know Sabretooth and what's her face, the long nails, because of the Lady X-Men Deathstrike movie. I've never really read any books with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lady Deathstrike. And just from that, Not Claws the Killer was certainly the worst, but yeah, I was able to enjoy the Daredevil book the most. Weapon Lost.
I think, the entry, the barrier to entry for X-Men books is really high right now. Because like you said, you've seen all the movies multiple times. You know the characters from the movies.
I know the characters' names because they tend to use the same characters that they use in the movies. Like Domino just appeared in Deadpool 2, so of course Domino's in the book.
Right, but even me, a long-time comic reader, a lot of knowledge, it's been a long time since I've regularly followed the X-Men. I mean, when I say long time, I'm talking like 20 years plus. And so even for me, it's like, it's tough, man. It's, 25 years since I followed these guys, and I'm trying to get back into it. I've read some stuff here or there, and honestly, a lot of the thing, like when I'll go to read something and I'm like, wait, what? What's the status quo? And I end up like going to Google. I end up going to Marvel Wikia, right? And I read these long articles or character synopses about, okay, here's what's happened, and you get the broad strokes, and it's nowhere near as enjoyable as reading the story, but at least you kind of get the gist of what's happened, right? So when I started reading Phoenix Resurrection, I was like, wait, I don't even remember, like, how did Jean Grey die this time? Since she's died, like, I'm not exaggerating, like, 8 times, right? Like, or been near death, like, at least eight times. I'm like, okay, let me go read, find out, whatever. So it probably took me like 2 hours to read this several, like, character synopses that were, like, long and recounted her whole history and everything and getting kind of caught up on things. And then I read the Phoenix Resurrection series, and at one point, it's almost like a throwaway thing. I see Jubilee biting the neck of this Hellfire Club minion and then like spitting out what looks like dirt, saying, yeah, they're not human. And I'm like, wait, why is Jubilee biting the neck? And so then I'm down the rabbit hole of Jubilee, and there was a really, from all accounts, pretty terrible event called Curse of M at one point. And this was after... I think this was after the House of M. So Jubilee had lost her powers. She was one of the mutants that lost her powers when, no more mutants. And then she gets turned into a vampire. That's how you keep her relevant, right? And then – so now she's a vampire. She lost her firework powers, but now she's a vampire. But she can walk in the sun apparently because she wears some like special magic medallion around her neck. And I'm like, okay, so this is Jubilee now. Jubilee's a vampire. I didn't think anything of it. I'm just like, well, that's kind of dumb, whatever. Right. So then I'm looking at this book, Mystery and Madripoor number 4, and I see her using her fireworks powers. And I'm like, well, wait a second. I thought she didn't have her fireworks powers anymore. I thought she lost those. I thought she was a vampire now. And I'm like, yeah, didn't she? She's been using her firework powers like all along during this. And I went back and I looked at issue 3. She used them. Issue 2. She used them. I'm like, what's going on? So then I had to go do another Google search, because the Jubilee page that it wasn't a very long article. I mean, she's nowhere near as important as Jean Grey, who gets a lot of attention. So I Google and I'm like, yeah, so apparently earlier this year, because you have to remember the Phoenix Resurrection story ended in January of 2018. So apparently in the pages of Generation X, sometime after January of this year and before this Hunt for Wolverine event started, Jubilee got her. I'm not going to spoil how, and in case you want to go and read it, the storyline's not that old. But yeah, she basically got reincarnated, all, kind of in a way. And now she's back to having the fireworks powers. And so when I was going back through this, there's a scene in the second issue when they first find the guy they're looking for that like helped create all the software for the rocket's guidance system. She attacks him and sets off her firework powers and makes a comment about, oh, I forgot how much I loved. It's so nice to have these firework powers, or I forgot how much fun this is. Something like that. I was like, oh, that line makes a lot more sense now. At the time, I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, oh, she hasn't used her fireworks powers in a few days, so she's happy to be using them again. Like I had no idea, but I say all that to say that, yeah, there's a high barrier to entry. Even somebody like me. Now, granted, I wasn't, like I said, up on like all the details for the last 20 years. And it's a lot to take in and to remember. And I know much more than the average person about comics and the characters and the X-Men and all that. So then you put somebody like you, who's even more tangentially interested, or just some person off the street who wants to, oh, I like the X-Men movies and I want to read X-Men comics. It's like, where do you even start? Right? Where do you even start to get caught up? There's so much there. And I talked about this on the episode yesterday for Marvel Monday, about how they brought Jean back. Now it looks like they're bringing Logan back. They brought Professor X back. So we had all those people dead at the same time. Jean Grey, Professor, in order of death, Jean Grey, Professor X, Cyclops, and then Wolverine. So we've brought back Professor X first, then Jean Grey was brought back. Logan's back here in a month or two. Cyclops is the only one left to bring back. So I imagine that's going to happen pretty soon. There is a new Uncanny X-Men title that's going to be starting up. And the extermination event that's going on right now, that's a weekly 5-issue, I believe, is going to solve, or I don't know, kill, return to their own timeline, whatever. The young versions of the original five will no longer be a thing anymore, like they have been for the last like 9 years, I think they've been in the regular Marvel universe. So
I read the issues they were introduced in, but I never read like past issue 3 of, I think it was called First Mutants, or like, I had a weird name. It was a weird book.
X-Men First Class, I think it was.
Yeah, it was just called that.
Yeah. So it does look like Marvel's aware of this fact, and they're trying to get things back to how they were. I mean, when I read that Phoenix Resurrection book, I'm like, I was struck by just how many X-Men Kitty Pryde is leading right now. I mean, they'd split them up into like five groups, and there'd be like five people in each group. It's just, it's huge. It's a huge cast of characters to try to figure out. So if they could clean it up and make it a little easier to follow, I think that'd be a good thing. I mean, they've kind of done it with Avengers, right? Where there's just one Avengers book right now. I think it's coming out twice a month. So if they do the same thing with X-Men, I mean, you're never going to get X-Men down to the number, to just one title, because you're obviously going to have a solo Wolverine. You're going to have X-23 have a book. You know, you probably going to have like an X-Factor or an X-Force or something like that. So there's probably always going to be multiple X-Men books. It's just a bigger corner. Because when you think about it, you kind of do have multiple Avengers books too, right? Because you have the
Avengers West title, Coast,
but then you've got you've got West Coast, but I'm also thinking you've also got Iron Man, and you've got Thor, and you've got Captain America, and technically, you know, you could consider those kind of in the Avengers family. So I think it's the same thing for X-Men. You could maybe get down to one or two team books, but you're still going to have a solo like Jean Grey book, or you're definitely going to have a solo Wolverine book. Maybe you're going to have, you know, Iceman or whoever. There's always going to be
more. And then three or four Deadpool books, if he counts.
Yeah, I don't know if he's kind of in his own. Deadpool kind of has his own corner of the universe at this point. So, but yeah, ultimately, I won't say that I'm glad that you got me to read this event, Nick, but at least I've got my toe a lot farther into the X-Men universe pool than it's been in a really long time. So my plan actually is to try to go back, and I've done this before, where let's go back and start with Giant Size X-Men number one and read forward and see how long it takes me to get caught up to present day. Like, find a reading order, right? I mean, that I would think at this point that's 40 years worth of books, and imagine like in the 90s just how much stuff there was. But there's a lot of that classic stuff that I haven't read. Like I don't even remember. I think I read most of the Onslaught storyline, but after that was kind of when and that was mid 90s. That was kind of when I was like, man, I'm kind of done with the X-Men, and I've never really paid much attention since then. So I've never read that classic Grant Morrison, Frank Quietly, New X-Men run, which had a lot of different kind of crazy ideas, and everybody talks about how great it is. I mean, it's Grant Morrison, so I have my doubts on whether I like it or not, but I feel like it's something that I should read. Same with House of M, same with Avengers versus X-Men. I mean, these are they're classic X-Men stories.
You should skip Avengers versus X-Men. I've read it twice. It was my first event book for Marvel. I wasted so much money on that stupid event.
But you just said you read it twice.
Well, it's because I had to reread it like all these years later, because I was at work on my iPad. I didn't want to do real work. And I was like, oh, I have Avengers versus X-Men on here. Wait, why don't I revisit it? And I was like, oh.
Now I remember why I did read it. Yeah, I mean, doesn't that have to do with the Phoenix Force also? Like they're
Absolutely. And that's not that's the good part of it, is the Phoenix Force involvement.
All right.
And some of the follow-up comics, including Iron Man, is probably the most interesting follow-up comic.
Yeah, and I know you said you wanted to read Phoenix Resurrection. Have you read that?
I haven't gotten to it.
I haven't gotten to it yet. Okay.
I haven't been pretty busy.
Yeah. No, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. So, all right. Is there anything else we want to say about Mystery and Madripoor or any of the Hunt for Wolverine miniseries?
I'm glad they're over. And I look forward to Return of Wolverine being the book we imagined all along. And Dead End's probably being a weird middle piece that's disappointing, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, again, I have to go. I've said it before on these Hunt for Wolverine spotlights where I really think they should have just done just one Hunt for Wolverine miniseries, maybe had it be like 8 issues long. You could have had all four of these storylines in that one title, you know, just transitioning from one, you know, part of the story to another. And I think it would have been just as successful. Basically would have had half the page count, and everything would have been in one. And I think that would have worked better. I think that these were padded a little bit and they kind of plotted along a little bit slower paced. So yeah, not a big fan of what Marvel did here. So,
or even vary them in length, like, Claws of a Killer could easily be 2 issues, but you could spend 3 issues on Adamantium Agenda. Just like the fact they all have to be set 4 issues weekly kind of constrain them all to the formula and the size of the arc. So
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you would have made it 1 8-issue series and could have gone, but yeah, you would have scaled back the storyline for Claws of the Killer and you could have kept just about everything from Adamantium Agenda. You could have scaled back, probably Mystery and Madripoor and Weapon Lost. I really think everything but Adamantium Agenda, and even Adamantium Agenda was maybe half an issue too long, but all the rest, I think Mystery and Madripoor and Weapon Lost were probably 1 issue too long. Probably could have done it in 3. And yeah, maybe even 2, like you said, for Claws of the Killer. So what does that add up to? 2, 5.5, 11.5. So maybe you could have done it in a 10-issue miniseries. Or even...
Well, I mean, the reason I was thinking they could still be separate books is because that's what Marvel did with the lead-up to Infinity War, whatever they were calling it, Infinity Wars, because it was like there were 4 Darkhawk issues, and there only needs to be 1 Darkhawk issue, but fine. And there was like 1 Black Widow issue and like 2 Champions issues, only 1 Champions issue. But it was that like idea where it's like, okay, some characters need multiple issues, some characters just need 1 issue. I think that could have worked with this book if you were like, okay, Claws of a Killer gets 2 books, and Adamantium Agenda gets 4, Love and Lost only gets 3, and Madripoor gets 2 or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's interesting how the two compare when they're both running simultaneously through the summer.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear somebody's opinion who hasn't read any of these and buys the trade and has them all together and reads all 4 of these in one big chunk, if that makes any difference. I also wonder, in the trade, will it be like issue 1 of each and then issue 2 of each, or will it be all 4 of one, all 4 of the other? You know what I'm saying? It'd be interesting.
I don't know. I want to know how much this trade's going to cost too. Because yeah, that's not your typical 7-arc, like 7-issue, 6-issue trade. That's like a fat book.
Probably be $30 would be my guess.
It's not worth buying it to find out those answers. But if anyone else has those answers, let us know.
Yeah, flip through it in the comic shop when it
comes. You gotta go. They're so separate. I think you would do them one storyline at a time.
Yeah,
because it's not like they ever interconnect except for hearing the same name.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter if you read them week to week or it doesn't matter if you read them all at the same time or read them one at a time. You're always gonna get to that name at the end. So.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource, Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The next show I'll be at is Long Beach Comic Con, the 8th and 9th of September. So hope to see you there. Once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.